one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we do have a quorum, and would someone like to approve the minutes? Okay, Representative Davis approved the March 2nd, 2015 minutes. Are there any corrections? All approve? Aye?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have passed for March 2nd, 2015. And we have some visitors with us today. Do we have a location where American Legion VFW members are from?
Montevideo.
Welcome. Welcome. Oh. Welcome. Wasika? Okay. Welcome. Okay, our first bill up today is House File 705. Yeah. Representative Howell? Okay, we will wait with those because 705 and 745 are both on the docket for today. So we'll go right to House File 1296, Representative Anderson. Welcome, Representative Howe, and I will move your bill. So would you please present your bill?
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1296, a little bit unusual, but its background is it's for a program that is unusual, outside the box. It pertains to the Eagles Healing Nest, which is a veterans program that is being run up in Sauk Center in a former girls reformatory school that was standing idle for 10, 15 years, and now through a lot of volunteer work, it's up and running. It's housing about 50 veterans up there, and the Eagles Nest is in the process, or they actually have purchased the property, so they're really getting more momentum. They were able to get some GRH funding last year from the state, which they really appreciate. And the director, Melanie Butler, was going to be here today, but they are holding a suicide prevention program this week. So it's a program that she just couldn't get away from to come down and testify. But Stearns County has been a great asset and help to the Eagles Healing Nest in getting going with their GRH housing and such, a lot of other services. And there's been some expense for Stearns County in working with the Nest. And a lot of these veterans that come there are not necessarily residents of Stearns County immediately. They're from different parts of the state. So there are some costs that Stearns County has undertaken. And they did get a little bit of funding last year. And now they're asking for an additional amount of money to help with their expense in working with these veterans at the Nest in Stearns County. And I have with me a testifier who would like to address that situation, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Sizer. I am the Human Services Administrator for Stearns County. And in Stearns County, Human Services provides all of the correctional field services, public health services, and social services to residents of Stearns County. And if I may just very briefly touch on four areas of services that we're providing to this population at Eagles Healing Nest. First is financial assistance, and this primarily started out as a group residential housing service to Eagles Healing Nest, but we are also providing general financial assistance eligibility and case management services. We estimate the annual cost for those services $11,392 to Stearns County. Just as an example, financial workers conduct interviews with Eagle Healing Nest clients that are requesting group residential housing funding. They determine their eligibility and then process that paperwork and then work with the Department of Human Services and the veteran to get those dollars flowing to Eagles Healing Nest to cover their room and board. A second area that Stearns County provides services to are general social services. We are estimating an annual cost of providing these services to the residents of Eagles Healing Nest to be $15,167. These are services that address chemical dependency needs as well as mental health needs. As I said, GRH case planning, detox services. We do see some of these individuals relapse and end up in our detox facility, and that is all county tax levy at a per diem of right around $350 a day. We also provide adult mental health services, protection for vulnerable adults, civil commitment processes, and disability services. The third, and perhaps one of the most expensive, is correctional field services. We estimate this cost at $59,313 annually. A number of the residents at Eagles Healing Nest are either on probation, pretrial supervision, or supervised release, which are individuals released from our state prison facilities. The numbers vary. Sometimes there's five or six, but as many as 15 residents that are under some type of correctional field supervision. Many of them are supervised at a high risk level, and this requires intensive supervision services. We have probation officers that go out to Eagles Healing Nest to meet with their probationers or supervised releasees, and we also have surveillance technicians that make visits in the evening and throughout the weekend to determine whether or not they are maintaining their sobriety and meeting other conditions of their supervision. And finally, we also provide, as a county, veteran services benefits. And are estimating the annual cost at $3,512 annually. The Stearns County Veteran Services officers do go out to Eagles Healing Nest and meet with the individual residents there. They also have those residents at times come into our satellite office in Melrose, Minnesota. Since many of these individuals do have a tendency to have a transient lifestyle, it does become difficult at times to do a counseling session with them and develop their claim. One claim might require one visit, gathering the paperwork, and it's completed. The next may require getting records from the National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis, obtaining medical records, obtaining statements from federal veterans he or she has served with, and ship's logs. Record requests are required in writing, so letters and faxes are required. Often when those records all do come in, they may be a ream or two of paper that needs to be copied or faxed or digitized in order to present that claim appropriately. These are the services. Adding them up, it comes to $89,382 annually. Currently, Eagles Healing Nest has 60 residents. They have five new residents, I understand, coming in this week with a current capacity of 70. They are working on opening a fourth building, which again would increase that population. Our concern is that we are able to provide these individuals at Eagles Healing Nest the very best services we can, and the House File 1296 request is a request to help offset some of those costs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. And when a veteran comes into the Eagles Nest, do they have their DD-214s? Are they Minnesota residents? How is that determined?
Many of them do not have their appropriate paperwork, and there are some that are not Minnesota residents. So again, our Veterans Services officer has to engage them and determine their eligibility and start working on that claim with them.
And how many veterans do we have in Stearns County at this point?
Oh, I do not know. Veterans Services does not fall under Human Services, so I would have to get that number from our Veterans Services officer.
Okay. Other Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is really a very good bill. I visited the Eagle's Healing Nest. They're doing an amazing job there. And to get to your questions, Mr. Chair, not all of them have good discharges. Some have bad discharges. But they're providing a social service for people at a cost that's substantially less than it would be if they were, for example, in the Hastings home. And they're doing, you know, for those veterans who do, most of them do have good papers. And most of them are also residents of Minnesota. But so the small amount of money would actually maybe cover the cost of two veterans at the Hastings home. So I think we're getting a lot of value for a small amount of money, and I would really like to see us support this bill.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm just delighted also to be hearing this bill. I know people who have involved themselves in support of this Eagle's Nest, and they've said the same thing, that it is just a fantastic service. So I have two questions. I'm wondering, first of all, if there happens to be any other entity like this in the state, or is it really that unique?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pugh, as far as I know, this is a one-of-a-kind type of thing. It's been run for a couple of years on a lot of volunteer work and elbow grease. They're now just getting some additional funding, and it's getting statewide national attention, and it works. It's veterans helping veterans. The trust factor is there, and as you've mentioned, it's remarkable what they're doing up there.
Representative Pugh?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm so grateful to hear that. And I have one other just basic question. I probably should know this, but it's one more acronym that I need clarification on, GRH. I do not know what that stands for.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Sizer.
Thank you. Group Residential Housing. And Group Residential Housing is a financial assistance program that two things have to happen. The facility has to be GRH approved, which Eagle's Healing Nest is, and the individual client has to meet both income and disability criteria. And if they meet both those criteria, they would be eligible for what's called Tier 1 GRH funding, which is $876 a month. That $876 a month does not go to the individual. It goes to the facility to offset their room and board. There is also an enhanced rate that Eagle's Healing Nest has not been approved for, but there is a bill currently in the legislature to request that enhanced rate, and that is 474. Don't hold me quite to that number, about that amount of money, and that is to assist the facility in meeting special needs. Many of these individuals have special needs with mental health, physical disabilities, or chemical dependency.
I have a question. Who, Mr. Sizer, who has the oversight of the facility? And is the facility owned by Eagle's Nest, or is there another organization that owns the facility?
The facility was owned by a gentleman out of Duluth, Minnesota, but Ms. Butler is in the process and may have already completed the purchase of the facility. With regard to licensure, she does have a room and board license through Stearns County Environmental Services, and then she, of course, would have any licensing for food preparation and meals, things of that nature as well.
And Mr. Sizer, so the county then has the oversight, comes in and evaluates the facility. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has no oversight over the affairs of the Eagle's Nest?
There is an oversight through the Department of Veterans Affairs on the $100,000 that was allocated last year for both transportation and training in suicide prevention. So they do oversee that part of the operation. Otherwise, Environmental Services would come in and oversee the room and board. Human Services, both at the county level and State Department of Human Services, would oversee that group residential housing segment of their delivery of services.
Okay. Representative Ward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, a unique facility. So I'd like a little better understanding of how the county is responsible for this facility, how you've developed that relationship, what needs to happen to make it better besides the money to do the kinds of services that you're talking about. But I'd like to understand better how this facility came into your county and how are you working this out?
Mr. Sizer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The facility came into the county, I want to say 3 years ago, and Ms. Butler started bringing in individuals into one of the buildings out at the old Sauk Center Home School, and she was leasing one of those buildings. She approached Stearns County and requested GRH approval for that type of funding. Stearns County had been reticent to do that, not just for Eagles Healingness, but any facility, because what we had found is once you do establish rate one, the provider comes back very shortly and requests rate two, and there's been a moratorium on rate two for many years, and we did not see additional need. As the population grew out there, we saw that there was an additional need for GRH funding. So we did agree to that and approve that funding level last year. As far as the county having oversight or running the facility, we don't. It's a private nonprofit. She does have a 501c3 status and a board of directors. So Melanie Butler and her board do run the facility. But we are involved in the GRH, we're involved in the county veteran services officer providing those services, and then any social services that a resident of Stearns County would be entitled to, as well as correctional field services and public health services.
Representative Ward? Are there any other questions from the committee? Representative Pugh?
You had one?
Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to mention that we do have two other somewhat similar facilities, and that's through MACV and their facility in Mankato and Duluth. But as you know, Mr. Chair, at those facilities, they're very restrictive as to which veterans they take in. But they do have to have good papers, you know, and the facility in Sauk Center is open to all veterans, and they don't ask a lot of questions, but they help prevent a lot of veterans from being homeless and a lot of others from possibly taking their lives. So I think it's just a terribly important facility, and I think we have to fund it. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? How about from the public? Is there anybody in the public that would like to make some comments for or against? With that, then I will recommend that House File 1296 be referred to Health and Human Services and Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
House File 705. Representative Howell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be back in this committee.
Welcome to the committee, and I will move your House File 705. And please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we also move the Amendment 705A1 to get it in the shape that I would prefer?
Okay, I will move House File 705A1. Go ahead and address your. Do you want to address your amendment first?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair. Actually, what the amendment does is it puts a sunset provision on the bill and actually allows it to go forward for 10 years. And I'll speak to that 10-year period with the bill.
Okay. Please proceed. Representative Howell.
I thought we'd adopt the amendment first. Is that possible? That way it's in shape that I would prefer?
I think you're right. I think we'll adopt the amendment, House File, the A1. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, basically what this bill does is one thing. What it does is it reduces the property tax on nationally chartered veterans organizations that have property, and it reduces their property taxes from 1.5 to 1, basically in a third. It gives these veterans organizations, which are viable assets and great assets to our communities, they're all struggling right now, and it gives them 10 years to get their memberships back up. You might not be aware, but the state of Minnesota is losing VFW posts and legions and veterans organizations facilities at a rate of 10 a year. We've lost 100 in the last 10 years. So this is not a bill to fix their membership issue. This bill is basically to let them be viable for the next 10 years while they address their membership and get these newer veterans into being members. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to give these organizations an opportunity to get these younger veterans into the fold, and we think that a 10-year period would make that happen. So with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I let my testifier testify, if that would be appropriate for the committee.
Thank you, Representative, and please introduce yourself, testifier, for the record.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of House File 705. My name is Tom Hagen. This month marks my 26 years in the Minnesota National Guard, including two deployments to Iraq with the Red Bulls, and including at least one of those with Representative Howell, my good friend and comrade. I'm a member of VFW Post 1642 and currently serve as the Post Service Officer, the Judge Advocate, and recently agreed just January 1st to serve as the co-chair of our club committee, which oversees the operations of our club. So now I can't pretend to know and explain to or answer questions about the tax impact on the local governments that would be affected. I can tell you our tax bill this year for just the VFW club is about $7,000, so which may not seem like a lot, but it means that small reduction would mean the world to us, and I'll tell you a little further as to why I think that. I do want to tell you my thoughts on why our service clubs are important. Because as nonprofits, every extra dollar we can make goes back into the community. And so will any tax savings we realize as a result of adoption of this bill. As Representative Howell said, the American Legion and VFW posts are struggling. Much of the current membership is aging. And the organizations, I believe, in my personal opinion, are transitioning to figure out their role in this new era and with the younger veterans and figuring out what younger veterans want from a service organization. But what hasn't changed is our commitment to our communities and our fellow veterans. So why are these clubs important? I agreed to serve 2 months ago as our club co-chair because I came to the realization that our club wasn't intended to just be another bar in town. The club is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. And that end is service to our communities and our fellow veterans. It's the vehicle that allows us to do those things we want to do for our communities and our fellow veterans. Our buildings themselves are often a community service, providing a clean, well-lit, convenient, an affordable location for so many community events, weddings and birthdays, reunions, etc. But our profits and gambling proceeds allow us to do so much more. And just real briefly on Waseca in post VFW post 1642, I'm also a member of our Legion post 228, and I won't speak to them today, but as far as our VFW post, our commander recently put an envelope to back, or pencil to the back of an envelope, and determined that over the years he thought the Waseca post 1642 had given over $1 million to local projects, including about $100,000, I would say about 15 years ago, to build a Waseca ice arena. And just last year in 2014, just from our charitable gambling alone, about $11,000 went to many youth activities, youth baseball in both Waseca and Janesville, Waseca High School yearbook, the Boy Scouts, Voice of Democracy contest winners, the 4-H, the Servicemen's Club at the airport we recently made a donation to, the Fire Department, the Waseca Historical Society, the VA Hospital, our Slay and Cutter Festival. And often our hall, we just give it away. We let people use it at no charge for smaller events. I want to share one anecdote, one brief story about things we can do for veterans. As the post service officer, I'm meant to be the member of the post who veterans can come to and ask questions. Sort of that bridge to the county veteran service officer. But they end up just calling with questions or requests for help in all sorts of ways. And a veteran called me just a couple of weeks ago, and a veteran of the first Gulf War, and has PTSD and has a service dog for therapy. And it's my understanding the VA itself has kind of stopped prescribing them or figuring out how to train them or who's responsible for that. But he got a dog from the Steele County Humane Society on credit for a couple months they gave him, only a few hundred dollars. But he lost his job immediately after that. And it took him a few months to find a job. And the Humane Society was actually calling him and wanting the dog back because he hadn't paid for it. And they wanted the dog back. And our Legion was able to just write the check and help them. And that's the sort of thing, again, you know, that 7,000 property taxes or a third of that may not seem like a big deal, but there's a lot of needs we can help. If we, as Representative Howe has termed it as kind of this bridge for 10 years, I think that's entirely fair and reasonable to buy some breathing space while we attempt to revitalize ourselves. So, I again, thank you for allowing me to tell a brief story from Waseca. I do urge your support of House File 705. It allows us to continue to do those things in the community that we've done for so many years. And so I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Okay, thank you. And just a question. I know back maybe 5 or 6 years ago we passed some legislation that helped the VFW posts and American Legion posts. If the amount of money that they donated into the community equaled their last year's taxes, that they got a break on their property tax. I should know because I passed, I carried the legislation. And I'm trying to find some people, our staff people, see if we could verify that. If yes, please. Mr. Hines, welcome. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but I remembered we passed some legislation. I know I belong to VFW Post in Forest Lake and also American Legion Post in Forest Lake, and they've taken advantage of that legislation, and they've saved a lot of money on their property taxes. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, Steve Hines from the House Research Department. I believe that the provision you're referring to is the language that's on page 3 of the bill, lines 29 through 32, which allowed these organizations to get a property tax break as long as they gave donations to charity equal to their property taxes in the previous year. Does that seem like the one you're thinking of?
That's the one I'm thinking about, yes. Mr. Hines, yes.
And I'd say maybe not quite 6 years ago, but it could be six, something yeah. in four to six years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mr. Hines, we see that language in this bill now. Just
yeah. So, Mr. Chair, this would be an additional break then for those properties that of about another 33% of their taxes over what they're paying now, which is reduced somewhat from what they would be before your
okay
before your that legislation you're referring to. These types of properties would have been paying full commercial industrial rates.
Right.
And so what that legislation did was allow them to get this preferential rate of 1.5% and to pay for those types of organizations that had some significant fundraising but still did enough or a significant amount of revenue activities that made them kind of commercial industrial, but as long as they donated money to charity equal to their property taxes, they got this reduced rate, or they do get it now, and this would give them a further reduction of about 33%.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Hines. Mr. Howell. Representative Howell.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any closing comments? Or
is there any?
We have also Mr. Purcell, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howell, I thank you for this bill, and I just want to speak in favor of it. And a couple of things just to build on what was said. There's circumstances that are out there and around Minnesota, and I'm thinking of Bemidji Legion that just closed down. Right in downtown, and part of the rationale is that we don't have veterans joining like maybe we did. Well, sometimes it takes a decade or more for a veteran to realize, as it did with me, that, you really want to be around your comrades a little bit more than what you figured. You find the property values, your taxes have gone up. You sit right in downtown commercial property, so it's can be a number of things that have got us to this situation, and I just thank you for the bill.
And Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Howell, I'm wondering how many American Legions and VFWs and any other entities that support veterans are currently in existence in the state of Minnesota, approximately.
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure I know that number. I don't know if there's if I can phone a friend of somebody that's in the audience that knows that number. But
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are 577 Legion posts and 230 VFW posts in Minnesota. And, that doesn't include the VVA and the Vietnam Vets and some of the other organizations that actually use, I know our local VVA uses our Legion post for meetings. So, the Order of the Purple Hearts and all those, we have a lot of organizations, but we don't have that many facilities to house them, so they tend to use the same facilities.
Mm-hmm. And there's, Mr. Chair, there's...
Representative Howell?
There's, I just was told there's about 450 American Legions in the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Lokes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd also like to add that you've got the Legion Auxiliary, VFW Auxiliary, so there's a huge additional group that also use those same facilities. So it's literally parallel, because typically you're going to have an auxiliary with both VFW and the Legion, plus you may have descendants. Just in that veterans connection there, it's about three times bigger than you would think. If you name all of the different entities that use that are directly connected to veterans. Thank you.
And Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Lewick just headed down the path that I wanted to the auxiliary, and I served for a number of years at the Chanhassen American Legion as the packing coordinator for Operation Minnesota Nice. So we packed care packages for the troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, which was awesome. And I saw on an ongoing basis mostly women, you know, that got together and, you know, really active in their legion. And I think I heard something about, I don't know if it's a program or another group, subset of daughters of the veterans. And I'm a daughter of a veteran, but was never approached. And it's something that, you know, I had on my mind, but I never actually proactively sought out membership. But if somebody came to me, I would sign up in a heartbeat. And I have a feeling that there are a lot of Minnesotans that would do that. So as we're looking to increase the ranks of you know, members, I think that presents a tremendous opportunity to engage the public. So it's just a suggestion. Thank you.
Representative Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to provide a little bit of background on this, too, of the 400 to 500-plus organizations that we're talking about. Not all of them have a physical structure that they meet in. Some may also use other public buildings and things from a cost containment standpoint and things. So if people are thinking, God, you know, Representative Howell's bill, 500 organizations looking for a tax break, I would suspect it's going to be less than that, given the fact that in my district, I can tell you that one American Legion is barely hanging in the balance financially, and another one has since given up their physical site and does meet in other public venues and entities to be able to stay as a viable organization and opportunity for veterans in our area.
That's right. And I know my two posts, that I'm a member of 4210 VFW and 225 American Legion, they work hard. They both have nice facilities, but they work hard to maintain them. And I think this would be a good piece of legislation to get forward for organizations. Maybe more organizations can then look into purchasing their buildings again. I have a concern, though, is how will we look at the new generation of veterans coming off the battlefield now and get them involved in our legions and our VFWs? Any suggestions there from the testifier? Or,
sure. Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. These, of course, my own personal thoughts, right. But I think that this is what I describe as a phase in transition as we're trying to figure this out. And I think that society's changed, and there's a difference that's not bad. It's just different between the generations as to what they may want out of the service organization. And I do believe younger veterans want an opportunity to serve and give back to the community. This generation is all a volunteer organization now, and they signed up because they had something in their heart that said they wanted to serve the country, the state, the community. And I believe my personal feeling is for the veteran service organizations to find that sweet spot, get that in their wheelhouse where they can provide an opportunity to just give back to the community as well. But I agree, there's probably something to that, as Representative Purcell mentioned, where when you leave the theater for, you go on be around your comrades for a little while, too. So. Yeah. Not, of course, Representative Howell, of course, but that is a phenomenon.
It is. Are you able to pull a rank on Representative Howell?
By date of rank, maybe, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I know one comment that the two posts are doing in my community is that the first year membership is paid for the new veterans coming in. So that's one incentive, is that you give them a membership and hopefully they'll start attending and being part of the service organization. So any other questions from the committee? How about questions or statements from the public? Okay, Representative Howe, with that, I
Mr. Chair.
Well, yes.
You have someone back here.
Yes.
Come on
down and introduce yourself.
Do I need to be on the mic
now? Yes, you do.
Okay.
please introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Chip Sherritt, retired Navy captain, Navy League vice president. The comment that I wanted to make is, from my observation, my personal experience, I see the VFWs and American Legions becoming community venues where they're used, you know, beyond just reaching out to the vets, to the community. That in itself is a great way to embrace the younger generation about how important that institution or those two facilities are for them as they transition into maybe serving their country in the military. And a couple examples, you know, in Forest Lake, the Sea Cadets in Blaine use the Forest Lake facility. They're learning about the military through their Sea Cadet operations, and all of a sudden they're doing drills and operations in that facility. If they choose to go on and serve in uniform, they're going to feel comfortable going back there. In Savage and Prior Lake, where I live, we have pancake breakfast all the time. Both the Legion and the VFW are volunteering to the community, saying, come on, and then we'll host. Again, that brings the community in, makes it a warm, welcoming place, and I think it's more enticing then for the veterans to become part of that organization. So I think they're doing a great job reaching out to the community in different areas other than just the veterans, and that's going to enhance long life for them, I hope.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And along with that, you know, the 4th of July parades, all the Veterans Day and Memorial Day, all the different activities that goes on in our communities are usually the people that are members and serving in our service organizations like American Legion, VFW, are a big part of that. And many times they're the organization that are organizing those activities. So, anything else?
With that, I would like to refer House File 705 as amendment to the Great Committee on Taxes. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. And Representative Howell, you have another bill, House File 745.
Is there any amendments for that one? Okay.
Representative Howell, I will move your House File 705, and I will also move the A1 amendment to get it in the form that you would like it. So please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the amendment does is it basically takes Section E and makes it so they only get the attorney fees if they prevail. So that's what the amendment does. Would you like to adopt the amendment before we take on the rest of the bill?
Thank you for the reminder. I will adopt the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Please
present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, those of you that were on this committee before, I think, remember this bill. It was a challenge for me last time, we've kept the good things about it, and I believe I'm just going to run through what this bill does. This bill basically does three things, and it was in response to a case in Hopkins where a veteran chose to do the veteran's hearing. He prevailed in the veteran's hearing process, which meant he was retained in his employment. Then the city sued him for the veteran for $64,000 for the cost of the hearing. That indicated that he won that. Also, he didn't have to pay it, but the court said that the law is vague, and we need to provide some clarity on who pays what. So that's what the intent of this bill does. It does three things. One thing it does is instead of the veteran, currently the veteran has, if he chooses to go this route, the veteran has two choices. They can either
actually, they don't have a choice. If the city or the governmental agency has a civil service board or a county preference board, they must use that board. If they don't have that board, then the veteran has the option to use the three-member panel. What this bill does is it gives the veteran the choice of either using the civil service board or the three-member panel. If the committee doesn't realize, the civil service board or the county preference board is basically appointed by the same employer that is trying to discharge the veteran. So this actually gives the veteran a little bit of an option on whether the veteran believes he's going to get a better, he or she is going to get a better, a fair hearing in front of that board. The second thing it does is the current bill does not allow teachers to use this process. This would allow teachers to also have those veteran teachers also to have this option to use this process. The third thing it does is it clarifies what the court asked us to clarify. It provides that the government or employer pays the cost of the hearing, and as the amendment states, if the veteran prevails, reasonable attorney fees. So, Mr. Chair, that's the bill. I would like to have my testifiers testify now, if that would be amenable to the chair.
That's fine, Representative Howe, and I see Brian Belfast. Oh, okay. I'm just looking at my list here. Why don't you introduce your testifiers?
Well, I think I'd prefer to use Joe Kelly. He was the attorney at the Hopkins case, and let him present what went on there first, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, fine. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. I was the attorney that represented Chris Droner, who's actually here before the committee. Chris can give you a better background of the facts, but the legal procedure that took place was Chris Droner was notified of the City of Hopkins' intent to discharge. After it was approximately what ultimately ended up being about a 12 or 13 month investigation, the hearing panel was selected. Chris Droner selected one member. The employer selected another member, and those two selected a third, a neutral member. The hearing was held over the course of 11 days, an 11-day hearing, 8.5 of which were used by the city, which Chris and I had no control over how long it would take the city to present its case. And over those 8.5 days, we took approximately 2 to 2.5 days to conduct our portion of the hearing. The panel members met unanimously decided that there was not misconduct justifying discharge or meeting incompetence or misconduct to justify discharge. Within a month of the decision, I think it was actually about a week and a half, Chris Droner was served with a notice of a lawsuit. He was a summons and complaint. We filed a motion to dismiss, argued that this is a constitutionally protected proper right, which the lower court agreed with, dismissed their case, saying that holding a veteran responsible for the costs would have a chilling effect on a veteran's right to exercise their constitutional right to this due process hearing. The city, unsatisfied still at that point, appealed it to the Court of Appeals. We did prevail at the Court of Appeals. However, the Court of Appeals determined that the city's complaint did not even meet the minimum requirements for a properly filed declaratory judgment action, so dismissed it, affirmed the dismissal, but did not rule on who is actually responsible for the cost. So they basically gave the city another opportunity to file a lawsuit against Chris Droner if they wanted to. At this point, the panel members have actually been paid for their fees But this is a case that started in 2012 and wasn't resolved until a couple of months ago. It's still technically actually an open end since the Court of Appeals did not actually rule on the decision about who's responsible. So the Department of Veterans Affairs had issued some opinions about who's responsible. Every time it's been before them in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings, they said, yes, the employer is responsible for the cost because it is a constitutionally protected due process right. The League of Minnesota Cities and County Insurance Trust had both issued memoranda also stating that the employer is responsible for the cost of the hearing because it's a constitutionally protected due process right. The League of Minnesota Cities has stepped theirs back and reworded their memo to say that the Department of Veterans Affairs' position is that the employer is responsible. However, there was some discussion last time about why this is necessary. And the reason it's necessary is that it shouldn't be up to one veteran to sit here and carry a burden of the costs of defending a meritless lawsuit. And this would clarify that portion and give the rights, again, to the teachers, but clarify the biggest portion being that who's responsible for the costs. And as far as the attorney's fees, as Representative Howard pointed out, it would only incur if the veteran, it's determined by a panel of three members or the Civil Service Commission about whether that veteran actually deserved to be fired. And as the Supreme Court of this state had stated before, the entire purpose of the Veterans Preference Act is to protect those members in public service who have served their country in an honorable fashion, the armed forces, and received an honorable discharge, to protect them from the ravages of a political spoil system, to protect them and protect their employment so veterans aren't getting fired unless they actually deserve to be fired. So therefore, I'm requesting that you move House File 745.
Okay. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And now I'd like the veteran, Chris
Schroner,
to testify.
Okay. Mr. Schroner, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Howe, and most importantly, veterans in the audience today. Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee on this important issue. My name is Chris Stroner. I am the veteran Mr. Joe Kelly testified about in front of this committee last session, and I'm here in person this time. I know my time is short, so I'll attempt to consolidate the last 3 years of my life into a couple of quick minutes. As a young boy, I wanted to be a soldier. I joined the Army when I was 17, and I served on active duty after I graduated from high school. Once I left active duty, I began a career in law enforcement, but I always felt like I had more to give to the military and more to accomplish. So, in 2000, I joined the Minnesota Army National Guard, and in December of that year, I deployed to Saudi Arabia with my National Guard unit. As everyone knows, September 11, 2001 changed everything, and four more mobilizations and deployments would follow after that. I returned to Minnesota for my last deployment on May 1st, 2012. On May 3rd, after dropping my daughter off at daycare, I drove by my police department to stop in and say hello. When I got there, my access card had been turned off, and there was a note waiting for me in the dispatch office, placing me on administrative leave while an outside agency investigated an incident that happened in 2010. I called my police chief to discuss the situation. And in the course of that conversation, he told me he thought it would be wrapped up by the end of next week. Mind you, that was May of 2012. At the end of May 2012, the outside agency did finish its investigation, concluded that there was no wrongdoing. Their investigation was reviewed by two separate prosecuting authorities who concurred with their findings. The city did not like those findings, the findings of those three uninvolved organizations, so they decided they were going to do their own investigation. At the end of June 2012, I learned that my administrative leave was in an unpaid status and I needed to get my union involved. After working unsuccessfully with the union to resolve the pay issue, I was finally told by them that maybe I should get a military lawyer involved. I truly was all alone. I had to hire a private attorney. And by the grace of God, I found a firm that actually cares about veterans. By January of 2013, the back pay issue was not resolved, and I was forced to file a civil lawsuit against the city. 2 days later, the city delivered an intent to terminate notice to me at my house. I requested and was given a Loudermill hearing, and the city subsequently reaffirmed my termination. I chose to appeal the termination in front of a 3-member panel, as was laid out in this bill. As Mr. Kelly said, a hearing was held over a series of 11 days in June, July, and August of 2013. The city took 8.5 days to present their case, and we took about 2. In October of 2013, the panel unanimously reversed the termination decision, and I was ultimately returned to duty in December of 2013. In October of 2013, I had a meeting with the police chief and captain to discuss moving forward after the investigation and the hearing. I left that meeting feeling like, as a department, we would be able to move forward. The next day, I received a knock at my door, and when I opened it, I was served with a lawsuit for $66,525.14. The cost of my selected arbitrator and half the cost of the neutral arbitrator. The case was heard in district court in December of 2013, and the city's case was dismissed in January of 2014. The city filed for reconsideration, and the district court refused to hear the request. I can tell you that's a surreal experience, having to take vacation time from work to defend yourself in court against a lawsuit that your employer filed against you. In March of 2014, the city filed an appeal with the State Court of Appeals, and that case was heard in front of the court in October of 2014. The Court of Appeals upheld the dismissal of the city suit in November of 2014. And as you heard Mr. Kelly say, it's my understanding that the two arbitrators were finally paid in December of last year and January of this year, just 2 months ago. To date, I've spent nearly $41,000 in attorney's fees defending myself and fighting the city's lawsuit. And that's at a deeply discounted veterans rate. I watched the testimony of Representative Howell's bill in front of this committee last year, and it was clear that every member of this committee understood that the spirit of the law was that the employer was responsible for the costs. But the law as it currently stands leaves enough ambiguity to allow an employer to leverage their vast financial assets against the lone veterans. Last year there was testimony that changing this law was not needed because it did not affect thousands or tens of thousands of veterans. I believe it was Representative Lesh, who unfortunately is not here today, that said, "It seems like we're leaving this veteran out to dry," and that's exactly how I felt. This issue thankfully does not affect thousands of veterans because most employers understand and comply with the law, but it does affect some veterans, and those few veterans are the ones that need the protection. This bill will not prevent employers from firing veterans for incompetency or misconduct, and it certainly does not take any rights away from veterans. It would ensure that a veteran's case would be heard in front of an unbiased panel that is not hand-selected by the same employer that's trying to terminate them. And it will ensure that a veteran does not have to choose between exercising his constitutionally protected rights and paying his mortgage. I urge you to pass this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story.
Well, thank you, Mr. Schoner. First of all, thank you for your service. And Representative Howell, do you have any other testifiers?
I think there's a couple more folks that would like to testify if they care to.
Okay. And welcome to the committee, and you can decide who wants to go first and just introduce yourself to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Belfans. I'm a third-generation proud veteran and a service-connected disabled veteran from the city of Roseville.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Before I came, I printed up Minnesota State Statute 36363A.02, public policy relating to freedom from discrimination. Just for clarification, to show that veterans and military status is not currently included, and therefore we only have the Veterans Preference Act to protect us. I'm also here to show solidarity to others who don't have the financial resources to push back against discriminatory and unfair practices, particularly as it relates to employment with a local government unit. I myself incurred $30,000 in legal expenses to get the city of St. Paul to finally admit that, yes, they had not only broken their own rules, but they had broken the law. I gave them three opportunities to work with me to stop that from moving forward. And each time, they wanted to proceed through litigation, which essentially runs up the costs and puts great risk and financial future for the veteran. That is why I respectfully request that the amendment limiting legal recovery of attorney's fees for veterans only if they prevail. I respectfully request, Representative Howell, that that be removed and that moves forward as originally intended. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have another testifier.
My name is Alan Bradford from Andover, Minnesota. I'm here to testify how Anoka County can use their way of bypassing veteran preference to get rid of people that they want. In their rules and regulations, in their states, that a veteran has a choice between veteran's preference or their own board of I chose veteran's preference and gave them my personnel, my person for the board. They sent my lawyer the name of the date and time of the board and the name of the persons who were going to be on the board that they picked. The board members were a city council member, a person who was running for council or commissioner in Anoka County, and it happens to be a friend of one of the county attorneys. During the hearing, the one that was leading the hearing stopped the hearing to make a joke with the county attorney about a former employee of a county. Now, how do you expect any veteran to get a hearing, a just hearing, when all three people are stacked against you? It cost me over $27,000 and I lost. I just couldn't afford any more. We excuse me, we gave our portion of our lives to protect Americans, and we thought we were going to get rights from, just rights from people when it came to, getting a job. But all we got, or all I got, was to have a stab in the back. I can't afford any more money to fight. And my lawyer said basically it would cost another $20,000. Where can an average working person afford $40,000 to fight? They can't. So I ask you, please, pass 745. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, thank you for your service. And Representative Howell, I know you've been working, this bill you've been working on for quite a while, and I know you've been bringing different organizations in, different people from different organizations to help you come up with the bill that we have before us today. Are there any other comments from Representative Newton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howe, this has been a long trek. And, I just don't know if it's really still ready for prime time, and I'll just mention a couple things. One of our major concerns, I think, is in getting veterans hired. And we all know that discrimination is there. I would hate to see anything in this bill that would lead to someone making a decision between two individuals, one a veteran and one a non-veteran, and hiring the non-veteran because the veterans do have privileges. And we don't have to say more than that, but it's there, and we know it's there. The other thing I'm concerned with is in eliminating the teacher positions. Virtually all teachers have to negotiate a contract with the school district. And so I don't know how this bill will affect already negotiated contracts into questions of termination. And, you know, especially after we just saw House File 2, and that's fairly long piece of legislation. I don't remember how this might fit into that. But as it moves forward, Representative Howe, you probably have to go to civil law, I think. Perhaps it's something that we could look at. I just have some of these troubles with this.
Representative Howe?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Newton. I'm sensitive to that fact, and that's kind of why I backed off of my original intent to have all the attorney fees covered and backed off to just if they prevail. That, to me, puts an onus on the governmental agency to actually know that they're going to prevail to go forward with this, and it also puts it gives the veteran and the attorneys that are going to represent veterans a little bit of cause to say, well, this might not be, I might not get paid if I go forward with this but from the governmental agency, and I'll have to get, you know, it gives the veteran some cause whether he's going to go forward with this or not. And I think that only those substantiated cases then would probably come forward. And I've heard from plenty of folks, just from the two last testifiers included in that, that believe that all the attorney fees should be covered. So I believe that if I did that, I would come back and we'd have more issues similar to what you bring forward as far as not wanting to hire veterans. I will bring up that the Department of Veterans Affairs actually brought forward that they, on line 3.1 to 3.2, not 3.1 to 3.2, I take that back, actually on 2.14, where we struck the governmental division's notice of intent to discharge shall state that the veteran, we believe that was redundant language because it also states on 1.15 that the veteran needs to be notified, but I don't think it hurts anything to add that. So as this goes forward, we are going to put an amendment to add that language back in, just to be clear that the governmental agency has to notify. So that's one change that will come forward, and I'll continue to work with the folks as far as we go forward on this.
Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And have you satisfied the League of Cities and the counties with the amendment?
Representative Newton, I think they're going to be coming down to speak, too.
Okay. So.
I think the opposition will be coming forward. We'll hear from both of those groups.
Thank you.
If we would have the League of Minnesota Cities, please come forward. And welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Patricia Beatty, and I am an employment attorney with the League of Minnesota Cities. I specialize in employment laws and employment litigations for Minnesota Cities.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the League of Minnesota Cities prefers to work with veterans and veterans groups in promoting good and fair employment practices, and I think our track record shows that we do this. Hiring programs were very supportive of following the clear public policy of veterans preference laws, we're very supportive of, and our cities consistently work with veterans groups to make sure that these employment laws are fair and consistently applied. The discipline and removal procedures that are found in House File 745, however, have to be closely evaluated, and I think the big picture and how the procedures currently play out in place here have been lost, and I want to make sure that all of the details are looked at by the committee and addressed. The League of Minnesota Cities has and continues to work to try to update the statute itself, and we agree that there's language in the statute that is confusing and that clarification needs to be had. The few situations that you did hear about are obviously not the ideal. There are many, many veterans procedures, removal procedures that take place in this state that operate functionally and efficiently without the disputes that you heard about. The League of Minnesota Cities will support the amendment to with respect to paying for the cost of the panel. And in fact, many, many of our cities have done that. Even though the statute does not specifically require that the public employer pay for the cost of this panel hearing, many of our cities have voluntarily done that and pay for the cost of all three panel members. It's usually not a dispute. But sometimes I must respectfully submit that veterans, like any other public employee, do bad things that the public employer has to address. And when that happens, our state laws, the veterans preference laws, has a very detailed mandated procedure that the government employer follows and has to follow. What has to be done is unique to the veterans law, unique to any other administrative process that you will find in employment law. Unlike a union arbitration where our public employees are protected by unions, where they get to go before an arbitrator and get to argue their case, unlike those employees, a veteran, whether they're union or not, when they elect to go through the three-member process or this veterans preference process, the employer is required to keep them on the payroll, continuing pay and benefits. And our cities follow that. Public employers follow that. Even in the situation where the discipline is warranted, the serious misconduct requires termination. And unfortunately, that does happen. The employee gets to stay on the payroll, not just for the 60 days to request the hearing, but for the entire process until the hearing is conducted and completed and the employer's decision is upheld. These processes, even in those cases of serious misconduct that's ultimately upheld, can cost the city, the public employers, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months of continuing pay and benefit. No other employee gets that, and we respect and understand the public policy behind it and follow that. And unlike non-veteran public employees who are not members of the military and honorably discharged who engage in serious misconduct, that doesn't happen for any other group. In addition, in these union settings where the non-veteran employee goes to a union arbitration, the cost of that arbitrator is split. The employer pays half, the union pays half. So the hearing process is split 50-50. And as I said, in the veterans preference situation, most of the local governments that I know of, even though it wasn't in the statute, voluntarily paid for the cost of all three panel members, not one arbitrator, but three panel members, which would get oftentimes into tens of thousands of dollars to pay for the process of the hearing. This is already being done. This is already being followed under our statute. Even for the small employers, I think it's important to note, it doesn't matter if the local government has five employees or 50,000 employees. The process is exactly the same, continuing pay and benefit, and most of the time paying for the entire cost of the procedure. The amendments in this case, while the League of Minnesota Cities cannot support them, is that bottom line right now, the process is extremely daunting and expensive for many of our cities. The small cities, as I said, pay for the cost of the entire panel hearing as well as the continuing pay and benefits that can go on for months, even in the case of these serious misconduct situations where the veteran is ultimately terminated. It's unfortunate that in those situations that happens, and it takes tens of thousands of dollars just to get to the point of removal in serious misconduct situations. But we understand that public policy, and we're willing to continue to support that and encourage that veterans be given this full process, this full fair process. But really, the current situation is a balancing of public policies right now, removing bad employees, because sometimes there are bad employees, with protecting and securing the veterans' rights in public employment. And it's being balanced right now. Adding the exposure, the particular part of the House file that we object to, there's two parts. One is the choice between the Civil Service Board and the three-member panel. Many of our cities have do not have civil service boards, and so it's always going to be in front of the three-member panel. But a few of the larger cities that have these civil service boards have been doing it for many, many years. It's very efficient. We have not heard the horror stories. And, in fact, there's a very fair, efficient, effective process in place, and there's not justification for changing that process for those cities. But the other part that we're objecting to is this reasonable attorney fees. Even with the limitation that the amendment puts on for the prevailing status of awarding of fees, this will happen in those situations where oftentimes, and I neglected to say this earlier, when there's a union involved, currently the status is the veteran employee can choose between going through their union grievance process or the veteran's preference process. But the union oftentimes represents the employee veteran in the veteran's preference process, which is almost always chosen because of the obvious benefit of continuing pay and benefits that they wouldn't get if they went through the union arbitration process. And so the veteran chooses to go and is represented by a union attorney, and they don't have out-of-pocket attorney fees. It's in those situations where either there isn't a union or for some reason the union doesn't want to defend the employee in the veteran's preference process and may not have even brought them through a grievance process, that the veteran employee hires their own attorney.
Mrs. Beatty, we have a question. Reverend Luke?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
I'd just like to go back. It was, and maybe I didn't understand. You made a statement earlier about continued pay in absence. And I thought I heard you say that no other employee, and I'm sure you're speaking specifically to cities, that if they have an issue of employment, no other employees are suspended on paid leave. Did I understand you right, that the only circumstance for any employee working for a city that would be in that situation would simply be a veteran, and no other employees would ever be provided that option?
Ms. Beatty.
Mr. Chair, to clarify, no other employee after the decision maker makes a final decision on discipline. So there certainly are circumstances when discipline is being evaluated and investigations happening and an employee's on paid leave pending that. But once it gets to that final decision maker, be it a city manager or city council in the situation of a city, and they have the completion of an investigation and the facts, and they're ready to move forward with their discipline, when that final discipline happens, no other employee then is continued on the payroll but a veteran. And again, it is that balancing of good public policies, and our cities comply with this. But no other employee, if you're disciplined and terminated and you're a union employee who's not a veteran, your pay stops. And then you go through your grievance process, and if you prevail, you might get your back pay. But in veteran situation, the continuing pay and benefits happens no matter what. And again, no matter what the charges are, no matter what the misconduct is, whether there's even criminal conduct involved, the veteran gets that process with continuing pay and benefits until it's concluded and the employer's decision is upheld.
Okay, Reverend Luke.
That clarifies a little bit. I just wanted to make sure that we did not leave the impression that veterans are treated uniquely relative to put on a paid absent due to some type of employment thing. I guess, and I do have a follow-up, and that would be, how do we, and you may not be the appropriate person to answer this, how do we deal with state employees? I see, you know, we've got local units of government here, but how is this dealt with it, with state employees? Because we've got a huge number of veterans employed in that world, but I don't see anything here that would address an issue with state employees. Again, I don't want to put the testifier on the spot, but maybe not her wheelhouse.
Representative Howell?
Mr. Chair, it is not my wheelhouse. I represent cities, but my reading of the statute and my understanding and experience is that it applies to all public employees and now to state agencies, and so it's the exact same type of continuing pay and benefit obligations for the state employer.
Okay, I just remind, you know, that clock up there isn't right. It's actually almost 209, 207, so we need to be moving on here. We have some other bills that we have to hear. And any other comments from the public quickly? At 2 minutes. Please introduce yourself.
Sure. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgard. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'll be very quick with the time constraints. I guess I would echo the same concerns that the League of Minnesota Cities just clarified.
And welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota, and I'm here to speak specifically to the 3.1, 3.2 removal of notwithstanding this section applied to the position of teachers. This probably goes back 4 or 5 years ago, where we implemented a piece on hiring veterans, where we made it clear that school districts who don't have 100-point systems would get every veteran an interview and guarantee that. But part of it was taking this section out because in statute you already guarantee every teacher the right to an arbitration, and that's 122A 40 sub 14 and 15. So our concern is you take this out and then it becomes a little arbitrary on whether you get arbitration by state law. You can go through the Department of Administration, or you could actually choose a third option, which would be the one in front of you.
Yeah. Well, with that, Representative Howe, I'm going to refer House File 745 to Government Operations as amended, and I request that you meet with like you have been for a couple of years here, meet with and because you'll be going before that committee then.
Absolutely.
Okay. All in favor, referring House File 745 to Government Operations as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Representative Hancock.
This can be a conflict.
There's so many issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to invite Representative Miller to come down, if he would, if that's permissible.
Looks like we got a double barrel here. And Representative Hancock, would you like to move your...
Yes, what I would like to do, Mr. Chair, would be to move House File 1414, and I would like to incorporate a A1 amendment, if I could, first.
A1 amendment. There we go. I got the A1 amendment in front of me, and I will...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let me...
what the A1 amendment does is it basically answers the questions concerning... the financing
Hancock,
of the bill.
Let's move the A1 amendment.
Okay.
I'd
like
favor
to move the A1
amendment.
To
say aye. Aye. Opposed? Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's really indeed an honor for me to have this privilege to bring to you a bill today that's
I think, rather unique in these circles. You know, Minnesota has long sought not only to honor its vet and recognize the vets, but to meet the real needs of veterans. And I think what this bill does today, I want to thank Representative Miller and both the committees in Montevideo and Bemidji, the task force that have put together these bills, that we recognize that it is really the needs of the Minnesota veterans that are important here. It's not necessarily geographic needs or political ramifications, but what we need to do today is to meet the needs of our veterans. And with Representative Miller and I, we've decided that both Bemidji and Montevideo have been at the forefront of veterans' home discussions for a number of years. I think since Governor Pawlenty first commissioned a thing in 2007 to study this. And certainly both task force have done due diligence and put forth, I think, very commendable programs. And what this does is it allows us to, like I said, put aside those differences, combine forces, and really provide for the benefit of the veterans in Minnesota. And with that, I'd ask for your support, and I'm sure Representative Miller would like to make some comments.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee. We thank you for this opportunity. I'll be very brief, considering time. I want to thank Representative Hancock and the people of Bemidji, and also the people that have worked on this in Montevideo. As I said, this has been a long process in moving towards this, and I'm very encouraged that Representative Hancock and the people of Bemidji and the people of Montevideo want to work together for something that we think will help the veterans of greater Minnesota in two different regions that definitely need it. And I want to make sure that we also recognize the American Legion members that are here. I know Post 59 from Montevideo. Thank you for coming, for your support here. And I do not have further information. I know we have some people that are willing to testify on what this really means.
Thank you, Representative Miller. And Representative Davids, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there anyone here from the department?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
If I could ask her a question here.
And would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Good afternoon. I'm Robin Gaustad. I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Healthcare for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Deputy Commissioner. With this bill here, is it the process, or maybe for the chair too here, is how are we going to handle these veterans' homes? Because I have several cities that are in the midst of looking at building veterans' homes also, and I was told that we wouldn't be putting bills in, that the department itself would be determining these things. So has the process changed, or where are we? Do we need to put bills in now, or what are we doing here?
Gaustad?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs acts on the direction of legislation from bills that are introduced and passed, and we implement as directed by the legislature and the governor's office. So we do not direct that activity. We respond to and implement as appropriate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and to the Deputy Commissioner,
Davids.
When did that change? Because I was told very clearly that they didn't want to make it political, so you didn't put bills in the department to take care of these things. Has that changed?
Ms. Gaustad?
Representative Chair, I would say that I can't speak to the question around change in terms of the process, but we respond as the department, the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, to implement and to provide some advice and answer questions relative to the development of veterans' homes at the direction of the legislature and the governor's office. But we do not make decisions relative to the approval or the decisions around veterans' homes development.
Chair Davids. Yeah.
Deputy Commissioner, I have several cities that are applying for veterans' homes right now as we speak. They have paperwork in. They're trying to do this, and what I understood was that we were not to be putting bills in, and that as the applications were made, that department would determine the need and go forward. So do we all need to put bills in for everything now? Has that changed?
Ms. Nasta, could you maybe explain, you know, what the complete being that we have the funding now for phase three and the number of beds that were allowed by the VA? Maybe give us a little information here that I think there's, what, 184 beds or something like that that we might have available? And
okay. Chair Detmer and Representative, I don't have my paperwork in front of me, but I can tell you that the Department of Veterans Affairs from the federal VA do a needs assessment and determine the number of beds required to meet the capacity for skilled and domiciliary beds for any given state and region. The state of Minnesota has been assessed, and they have created a capacity and a cap of 1,058 licensed beds for veterans for skilled facilities and domiciliaries. So they're included. We have now, as Representative Detmer is alluding to, we have now received funding for the final phase of campus development on the Minneapolis campus that will provide us, when that phase three is complete, 300 skilled nursing beds on the Minneapolis campus, which is 9 more skilled nursing beds than we currently have. And it will also result in an empty skilled nursing facility building on the Minneapolis campus that could house an additional 91 skilled residents. So if you add all of those numbers together, there's a potential capacity of 144 new skilled or domiciliary veterans beds for the state of Minnesota before we meet that 1,058 cap.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Deputy Commissioner, has the department determined a need for the Montevideo area and the Bemidji area?
Ms. Dostad?
Chair Detmer and Representative, we have been working with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency through a grant process that actually Representative Newton and some others initiated last year to create a needs assessment. And we're working with a vendor right now, there are grant dollars for communities to apply for through that process so that they can determine the needs for veterans health care, including veteran housing and homelessness, for their communities or for their regions. And so what we've been encouraging folks to do, and I have a question and answer fact sheet that will answer most of these questions that I would be happy to send to Representative Detmer so that he can distribute to the committee, that answers many of these questions and does lay out those bed numbers as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe I know we're on a time constraint here. Maybe if the Deputy Commissioner could set up a time to meet with me in my office, because what you're going to have is you're going to have a run on the bank. You're going to have every community wants one of these, and you're going to have a whole lot of folks applying. And so maybe you could set up, have your people talk to my people, and we'll get together and talk about this. Now, is this going to taxes?
State government finance.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative.
If I can interject, just in working on the Veterans Housing Committee last session, what we found is that the commissioner accepts whatever we send to him, and he'll forward it in without trying to make any kind of judgment as to which project should have a priority or doesn't have a priority. That's more or less left up to the legislature. And we already have, if I'm not mistaken, Monticello and Wilmer, Brainerd, Bemidji, and I'm forgetting one, that already are with the commissioner, as I understand it. And my last communication with him was that they were holding these and they'll forward them, you know, for assessment. So
and with that,
we need to talk about this more.
And with that, Representative Newton, is that even though we had them at the federal level, we had to pull them back because of the bed numbers. Mm-hmm. And once the legislature decides if we're going to go through with a project, then that's put on a list at the federal level, because the federal level funds the majority of this. And who knows where we might be on that. It could be 2, 3, 4 years down the line before we get a green light. So just a note on that. Mrs. Dostad.
If I could just add, Representative Detmer, just one clarifying point. We cannot, the commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs does act as the pass-through to, at the direction of the legislature and the governor's office, to put projects on the federal grant program list. However, because there are only 144 licensed beds available before we hit the 1,058 cap, we cannot add projects or proposals for more than 100 and that equal more than 144 beds. And that's what caused some of the issues with the previous proposals.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I make a few comments on what has been discussed? I think the idea, I want to integrate veteran services in housing in other areas, and I think we need to do that, but I think as taxpayers we have a obligation to provide for the needs of our veterans when it comes to veterans homes. I think Bemidji and Montevideo have actively, and I apologize, the veterans case here, I wanted you all to have a copy. I thought it was available, but I will make sure that you get it. It's available electronically too. We put due diligence in since 2012 to build this program. If I could walk through it, we've identified 31,000 veterans in northern Minnesota that are not being served, including 4 Native tribes that have a ratio of veteran services much higher than the general populace. I think the needs of northern Minnesota are not being met. I don't argue that there are not veterans throughout the state that could use veterans' homes, but I think Montevideo and Bemidji have identified themselves through consistent efforts in putting forth the programs that we should decide. We're asking for the 140 beds to be split between us, 70-bed units. We've put together the need, I feel. We've put together the support services in the community, and we have the signed approval of 4 reservations and various cities and counties throughout the area. And I would encourage that, you know, even if we were to put this into a bonding bill this year, it's a year from October before the feds respond, and then a couple years on the waiting list. So if we want to move ahead and help our veterans, I think we need to proceed with due diligence here.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for Representative Hancock, Representative Miller, for bringing this bill. And I am on the bill, doesn't show up here right away, but and of course represent the city of Bemidji and a good chunk of the northwest Minnesota with Representative Hancock. And you know, we've been at this for a while. I think the first time I carried a bill for Bemidji was before 2012 even, but I'll go back and look at the records. But and we run into the Minneapolis VA stuff, and you know, Mr. Chair, we've been around this bush a long time, and time to start doing something if we can. I think we have the opportunity, so thank you for the bill.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yeah. Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, just in respect to Representative David's comments, I think what we're trying to do here is recognize as best we can the fact that this could go around and around, as if you will, kind of competition throughout the state. And these are two communities that definitely have the need, definitely have the resources. One thing I want the committee to understand that this whole application process is very remarkable and takes a lot of time. And these are not just simple documents that are put together in 30 days' time. And what has happened in the state, as Chair Davids has mentioned, is that there are other communities that have gone through the process to different varying degrees. And really, at this point, these are the two communities that probably have the applications that can be adequately presented, even for consideration at the federal level. That's not to say that others can't do that. We believe that this has happened at this time. That's why we are coming to the table. We're not trying to race and beat anyone else. We believe that this is a need in the state, and this is something that we can provide in this state at this time.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the recommendations of my committee the last time was that rather than building new veterans' homes, that we focus on finding wings of existing nursing homes and using them for facilities for veterans. They would be funded through a combination of CMS and the VA, because veterans' homes tend to be very expensive to operate, and it would be an increase on the budget for the state. And I know Representative Davids, for example, was looking at Preston as a place for a veterans' home. Also Rochester had been mentioned. So with your two homes and the two that in your area, Representative Davids, it would automatically exclude Wilmer and Bemidji and either Preston or Rochester because of the geographic limitations that are placed on location of veterans' homes. So I think all of this, you know, has to be discussed more. I know it's going on to government ops, but I think, you know, we have to look carefully at this to see what's the best, how can we best serve veterans within their communities and take care of them, not close existing veterans or nursing homes because we don't have enough clients for them, and also to make sure that all the communities are served and not just certain communities in the state. So with that, you know, it's just something we have to consider, because I don't know for the two of you whether you have nursing homes that are struggling, but a lot of our nursing homes are struggling throughout the state. So with that, I'll stop.
And thank you, Representative Newton. You know, and with that, I know talking to different veterans groups and veterans themselves, you know, there's something special about a veteran's home. You know, the five that we have are excellent homes, and I know that the communities would like to bring a veteran's home in their community, and veterans, if you talk to a veteran, they would like to be in a veteran's home. And I know that in terms of putting a wing on and a commercial home, there's some pros and cons about that too. But they also have to be certified. They have, and who's going to have over, who's going to be watching over these wings, so to speak. So there's some definitely questions that need to be answered there too. But I think what we have before us today is a bill, and this will be going on to the State Government Finance Committee. And are there any other comments? Any other comments? Okay, with that, I will move House File 1414 to be referred to State Government Finance as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. And we are running out of time here, so I have to apologize to myself, House File 127, the USS Minnesota Commission in Activities grant. We'll have to bring that back next Monday. I know Mr. Charette and Mr. Hunton is here. I apologize. We'll bring you back. And also House File 506, Representative Schoen. With that, this meeting is adjourned.